Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Health Talks with Dr. Trin. The one show, the only show that shows you the path towards a healthier life. One conversation at a time. And today we've got not just one conversation, we've got multiple conversations with multiple people here today, all talking about an issue that we've touched on before, but we're going to delve deeper into it. This idea of, what do we call it? Faith-based community nursing?
No, faith no. community nursing.
See, I mixed it up already here. Faith community nursing. All right. To tell us all about it is the woman who pioneers and pushes this, and some of the people who support her. Aetna Keegan is back with us today. Hey, Aetna.
Good morning, all of you. How are you, Paul, this morning?
I'm doing good. So give us some hint. Explain what that term means again. Just set it in perspective for those that didn't hear the earlier
show. Okay. This morning, we're going to talk about faith community nursing. And what faith community nursing is it's the old name for it was parish nursing. Mm. So if you remember in the olden days, the nurse in your parish, everybody went to her and talked to her about their medical problems, even before they went to the doctor.
Right.
So they do many, many things, and I'm going to let Linda talk about it. But before we do that, I want to mention, Paul, that last month was honoring nurses.
Oh, okay.
All over the world.
I didn't know that.
And May 5th was Nurse Week that week. And we want to thank our nurses and our heroes for all that they do. And we appreciate them. We love them. They don't get enough thanks. So I wanted to talk about that really quick.
And just give us a quick overview. This program specifically is pioneered and put in place by Hoag Hospital. Is that what I'm hearing?
No. The Faith Community Nurse was started by Westberg.
Okay.
And he pioneered the parish nursing role. And Hoag is affiliated with Westberg, and we teach the Faith Community Nurse Foundations course. So all of the nurses that take the class are very well versed on how to go about being a faith community nurse in their congregation. Now, it's interfaith. Interdenominational.
That's what I was going to say. Is it based on one denomination or is this spread across all faiths?
No. We have faith community nurses. We train them to be able to work within their role at what to do, what not to do, how to help, how to walk alongside their attendees or clients of their church members, temple members, mosque members, Catholic churches. They provide programs to help. This past weekend, we did a fall prevention class and a exercise class for seniors in one of the congregations. We do blood drives, we do blood pressures, we do educational programs to help our seniors and oftentimes help them stay at home in their own house. Go to their doctors with them to help them because as you get older, sometimes you don't remember
You remember what the doctor said.
You always need to have somebody alongside you.
That was my late aunt and my late mother both. What did the doctor say? I don't know.
Yeah.
Somebody had to go with them. You have
my sister is the same way. I asked her, what did the doctor say? Oh, he put me on a new medication. What's the medication? I don't know.
I don't know. I just do what he says or she says. All right. So today you brought with us not just your own expertise in teaching these classes and spreading this idea, but you brought somebody who does it is a
in
faith.
Her church.
That's right. Yeah. So we have with us Linda is a one of these faith community nurses for where? What community do you serve?
So we are at with University United Methodist Church in Irvine.
Okay. I drive right by it every time I go to campus there. Yeah.
Yeah, stop in anytime. We'd love to see you.
And what the heck do you do and how do you do it? Do you do this for free? Do you get paid by somebody? How does this all work?
Well, the good news is we do it for free. The reward is the joy. And that sounds hokey, but it really is true.
Yeah.
We are really blessed as a congregation to have 10 registered nurses. Some still active, some retired, but which has been a blessing to us to really keep the program going. And with Hoag support, we started to affiliate with them 8 years ago. And they have given us an opportunity to provide, not just to our congregation, but to the community, CPR AED classes. We sponsor flu shot clinics. As Ethne said, we do blood drives. We have community education programs. We sponsor developmental screenings for kids ages birth through 5 years of age. So Ethne kind of talked about the part that we do for our seniors, and our congregation is a lot senior. So yeah, we do quite a bit for them, but we also do a lot for our kids as well. So in addition to the developmental screenings, we also each year host a teddy bear clinic.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that we have Child's World Preschool on our campus, and every December they have a winter festival. And so we are one of the stations at the festival. So the kids know ahead of time that we'll be there. They bring their stuffed animals of all kinds. Could be a teddy bear, a dog, a horse, an alien, anything. And we sit down with them. They introduce us to their favorite animal. Tell us what's great about them and what their problems are. And we take them through a physical assessment. So we let them take their temperature and listen to their heart and take their blood pressure and bandage their wounds and that sort of thing. And then at the end of the whole process, they get a certificate that says their animal is in very good health. And that, you know, the idea of doing this is to just give kids a safe place to kind of do some of those procedures and just routine exam things that they would go through in a doctor's office. So
what an incredible idea. Aetna, who came up with that idea? Because now you get the kids thinking of health, and they are taking care of their little imaginary friend here, and in the process, learn what they're going to go through in an examination by doing it not on themselves. And, oh my God, what comes next? And this is scary, and I'm going to get a shot, and it's going to hurt. Instead, they're taking control of their little stuffed animal. So I think of my grandson and all his little baby Yodas that he collects here, and he has all these baby Yodas from the Mandalorian series. And he just carries them. He's still 8, but he just loves them. And his little 2-year-old brother, who literally walks around holding them all the time, like it's his best friend. What a cool idea. Who came up with that?
One of our nurses was assistant dean of the nursing program at Saddleback. And she and some of her peers had done it in the past. So it probably goes back way farther than that. I'm not even sure, but she brought the idea to us, and we in turn took it to the preschool and just kind of turned it into our own kind of a program.
I think that's something. Is anybody else doing that, Aetna, or is that just in this community?
From what I know right now, there are many places doing it. Chalk does it in a certain way. They all do it in their own different ways. But I just felt that this is something really needed today for young children to make it easier for them to go to the clinic, to go and see their doctor. And they look at it and they say, oh, I can bring my stuffed animal with me and I can show the doctor what I do, how I assess. And then they watch that and it makes them feel so much better, less fearful.
Why are we so scared of the doctor, Linda? I was always scared going to the doctor because I associate it with a shot or something that's going to hurt. And nowadays, their heads must be filled with, oh, have I got COVID or have I got something else? Or, you know, all these scary things floating around there. Why are kids so scared of, and maybe I'm exaggerating, maybe they're not, but my own grandson isn't real thrilled to go to the doctor. Why are kids still scared and are, why?
I think there are just tons of people out there that do a beautiful job caring for kids. And when care is provided in a positive way, even when something difficult happens, they seem to do well. But sometimes we miss the mark on that. And the other piece, not is to just reassure our kids, but their parents as well. Sometimes their parents are so fearful that their kids kind of pick up on that and it makes it difficult for everyone. So when you do the teddy bear clinic, it doesn't just benefit the kids that are providing care to their animals, but their parents kind of get to see what they're doing and kind of think through some of that as well. So, you know, I think when we all partner together, healthcare providers and parents, in supporting our kids, I think it makes it a much more positive experience.
Well, let me ask you a hard question, and maybe we don't want to go down there, but it seems like today more than ever I've known, we don't trust our doctors. We don't totally believe all the stuff you guys are saying here. Maybe I should take that pill. Maybe not. Maybe that vaccine is good for my child. Maybe not. Maybe I'm not going to give them a vaccine. And we're second guessing the information we're getting. Is that real? And what can we really do about it?
That's because we have Mr. Google.
Yeah, Mr. Google tells you the real answer. Doctor doesn't know, but Mr. Google knows. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, he knows what's going on. And there's so many things out there available to us. In the olden days, we used to have the doctor visit our home.
Yes.
And anything he said went, you know, we believed everything he said. Now that everybody has access to the internet, different types of healthcare, different things, it's not that they mistrust or distrust their doctor or clinic or whoever's providing the care. It's that they have so much information. It's hard to discern sometimes between the two. Right. And sometimes that's how we as faith community nurses are able to help the client or the patient. We're able to sit down with them, go over their medications, go over the list they're on, go over their diseases, what should they be doing, what nutrition plan should they be following with their medications, what they can take with their medications, you know, that what's contraindicated. In Lipitor for cholesterol, you wouldn't have grapefruit with
right,
that.
Right.
So who would know that if they weren't told that? So that's one of the benefits of a faith community nurse, to come alongside the patient, be there for the patient, walk with them through all of this. Because when somebody gets an illness, whatever it is, whether it's heart, whether it's cancer, whatever it is, they're scared.
Right.
Like you said some time ago, your aunt didn't have anybody to come alongside her.
No.
You didn't have anybody to come alongside you.
No.
This, Linda, fits that perfect role along with her colleagues in doing this. And Linda, if you want to talk a little bit more about what you do with the seniors in your
And give us some examples, stories. You don't have to name names, but just here's an example of how you've helped somebody, not just the clinics and giving more access to information, but one-on-one. What kind of questions you hear? Tell me a real story.
You kind of alluded a little bit to COVID, and there have been quite a few questions about that.
I'll bet.
And helping people. The great part about faith community nursing is that we have the gift of time to spend with people, really hear what their fears and concerns
Amen.
Are.
Amen. They're not being pushed out in 5 minutes. My number one complaint, right?
You have an opportunity to listen. What are your values? What are your fears? What are your beliefs? And you can help move them to hopefully make helpful decisions, meeting them where they actually come from. So we've done a lot towards helping people understand COVID vaccine and COVID protocols, that sort of thing. We've had a number of people that have had family members that have been hospitalized and were struggling with decision making, and we were able to sit down and help them understand disease processes and options and differences between hospice and palliative care and some of those choices that they were being given and not really having it explained to them. And even just with our health screenings, I can't tell you how many people we've actually done hearing screenings on and moved them to get hearing aids. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's huge when people become sort of cut off from the world and they don't even realize it because they don't really hear what's going on. So, you know, to watch something like that and suddenly their spouse is coming up to us and saying, oh my gosh, thank you so much for identifying this issue. We were able to finally move my husband or wife to get what they needed. So
you just brought up the key question. Where do you go in serious health issues? And I've talked about it many times, the sudden choices I had to make on behalf of my aging mother, aging father, aging aunt, serious, maybe dying. And what do you want to do right now? Do we go in? Do we do this? Do we do this? Do we put them in a nursing home or not? Do we take the operation or not? Do we take this course or not? Do we stop taking the medication or not? And I'd say, I don't know. And my question was always, what would you do if this was your mother or aunt or father? And most of the health practitioners go, I'm not going there. I'm just telling you what your choices are. Go figure it out. So you go to Mr. Google. You don't know where else to go. At least I don't think I'm a member of Catholic Church, but I didn't have a congregation out in the desert that I was participating in, and I didn't know their congregation well. I don't know where to go.
Well, just to give you an example, Paul, I know you love stories. So
yes, that's
being
it.
Irish, you know, I'm going to give you a little story.
That's the whole thing. Okay? She's got it.
Your day, okay, Paul, okay? Just recently, one of my dear friends needed help, okay? She was diagnosed with melanoma and had made some major surgeries. I'm not going to state her name, but she had quite a bit of surgery and they could no longer do much more for her. So she needed some help with going to the doctor with her to decide what to do, whether to do chemotherapy, what stage was her cancer. And she was really, really scared. She didn't want to say that because she's a godly woman, but she was really scared. So I said, don't worry, I'm going to go along with you. I'm going to be with you at the doctor. I'll take notes. We'll record it for your family if the doctor gives us permission to do so. And I will sit down with you. I'll stay with you until the end, and then we'll take you home and we'll go to lunch. So when we got to the doctor's office, I could tell, you know, by the way she was walking and thinking that she was really scared. What was the doctor going to say? Is this going to be the end? Is this terminal cancer, you know, that nothing can be done? And she had planned for a couple of weddings that she wanted to attend of her grandchildren. And so we went in, we sat down, we were talking. I knew the right questions to ask because of my training as a faith community nurse. I knew the right questions to ask the doctor. And we just sat down, we talked it through. And he said, I don't think that your cancer is stage 4. I think it's only stage 3. But we're not going to make a decision today on doing chemotherapy. We're going to do this. We're going to do a PET scan. We're going to do blood work. We're going to do genetic markers. We're going to do all these things. And then we will decide at that time what's going to happen and how we will go through. Well, you would be amazed. She would not have known what questions to ask.
No.
And you would have been amazed to see her demeanor changed from being totally scared and not knowing to what to expect. And then she felt so much relief. And she's going through the testing right now. And it made her day and her life much better. She was able to go to the weddings. She asked the doctor, can I go to the weddings? Of course you can. Mm-hmm.
So what do you see day in and day out? Are people just frightened? Are they alone? Are they confused? And are you then, sounds like you're almost just a friend to walk with them, a counselor to help them figure it out, somebody to walk the path with them. Because I tell you, it feels awful lonely when something serious comes up.
Yeah. Well, yes. And just recently, believe it or not, I on a family matter, my brother just passed.
Oh,
and I went home to Ireland. I was back home. And the family just didn't know where to go, what to do.
Yeah.
So I helped them walk alongside again because of my training as a faith community nurse. I walked alongside of them, went with them with my nephew to get the arrangements made. And as we were talking about the different things, different decisions we had to make, it's very scary.
Oh,
we're talking about that.
Nobody's ready for these conversations. What do you want to do? Somebody died. Somebody's sick. You're sick. I don't know. What should I do? What could I do? And you're overwhelmed by all these things. And most people just kind of back off and say, well, I'll let you figure it out yourself. No, don't let me figure it out myself. I have no idea how to figure this out myself. We used to come together more as communities around crisis, as our communities, I don't know, maybe that's still their churches, I'm sure, that have very strong active communities. But as church attendance has shrunk, as we've all become more virtual, as we become more mobile and move around the country, those family networks, those church networks, those community networks seem to be fading, falling apart, and more we're left on our own. Am I overemphasizing this, Linda, or do you see that same problem, that we're more and more isolated and alone, particularly at these times?
Yeah, we do absolutely see that. And I'm kind of glad that you've gone in this direction. You know, the hope for us, I know all of us as Hoag faith nurses, is not that we just serve our congregation, but we are available to the community. You know, there have been a number of times when it wasn't our congregant necessarily that was sick, but I have a friend who doesn't know what to do or what to ask.
Right.
And it's important to, you know, the people who stay most healthy and have good quality long lives are ones that stay connected. So we really want to work hard to keep people connected. So friendships and family supports are really important. The extra piece that a faith nurse can add to that is that we have a medical expertise. We've got a background and a base of knowledge that not everybody has. So we can bring that extra piece of support into whatever relationships people have as they're struggling through medical decisions.
So give me another story, Linda, about a friend and going home to Ireland and helping the family deal with the loss of her brother here. Give me a recent story that pops in your mind, something that really hits you and like, wow, boy, now I know why we're here.
Yeah. So recently, and this wasn't even one of our congregants, but through my work, everything that we do through Hogue, through Faith Community Nursing, I put that out to my colleagues at work as well. And we recently had a woman, a director of one of our programs, who had a child who ended up in the hospital. It's significantly sick, and she was terrified and didn't know what to do and didn't know how to make those decisions. And we were able to FaceTime with her and support her and help explain the things that the doctor had been explaining to her so she understand the treatments that were being provided. And fortunately, we had a really good outcome. He's since been discharged from the hospital, but I really feel like she felt like she benefited from having nurse guidance during that time. I mean, she had a husband, she has friends, she has a lot of support, but I think the nursing piece really made a difference for her.
I just remember walking in the, I'll give you my quick story. So obviously I'm an only child. I took care of my mom, my dad, and then her sister who never got married. So I went through this three times, the last stages of life and being the care provider and all that stuff. And the choices and the questions that I was asked all the time. And I'm like, I don't know. And I'd look around and my wife would say, I don't know. And my friends would say, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. I don't understand. And everybody said, I don't know. And I wanted somebody who'd say, I do know. Let me at least explain it. Let me give you some choices. Let me help you weigh the pros and cons. Let's talk about it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. They just wanted my answer as the caregiver. So one example, so I walked in, my late father, what finally killed him at 93 was a fall. He was pulling on something on the refrigerator and it slipped, trying to get bread out of the refrigerator, and it yanked on it and he fell backwards and hit his head against the counter, and immediately whatever it is, swells and brain injury, and rush into the hospital. And I race out there. He's 2 hours away in the desert and he's in a coma kind of and in and out. First question, I walk in, they say, we could operate, but it would likely leave him blind, or we can let it sit and he will likely die. What would you like to do? I said, what's choice number three? I don't like either one of those. And I couldn't make a decision. And that's not like me. My father wouldn't have liked that. Just make a decision and go with it. I couldn't decide. Not in that moment, not in that grief, not in that anxiety. And so we waited and it went down and subsided. And then they said, okay, the crisis had passed. Well, it didn't crash. A month later, in and out, he finally died. But I was so stunned and I was so angry at everybody. What you want me, tell me what you think I should do or explain this to me. But they're like, time's up. You got to decide right now. And I can't tell you, we got it. We're either going in or we're not. And what do you want to do? Oh, flip.
Yeah, that's the difficulty that we find a lot, Paul. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if you had a faith community nurse alongside you in your congregation?
Took me aside and said, hey, we know what it is. Let's go in another room and let's talk about this. I'll tell you what they're saying. I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you what I've seen and hold my hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just sit with you. We explain it all. We don't make the decision for you, but we sit with you and we let you process that information. And then we are just like a presence there for you.
Oh.
Just having a warm body beside you, just so you're making that decision after we've helped you with all the information and what we know and what we're trained to know.
Emphasize how important that would have been. I never felt more alone, more confused. It's my father. I got to get this right. And I got 30 seconds. You're telling me you've thrown this thing at me and I've got to make a life and death decision in 30 seconds. I was not prepared to do that.
And that's what we do too. We also do preparation training and education. For example, like advanced directive. You know, what if this situation, we do education programs. What if something like this happened? Would you be prepared for that?
Right.
You know, so we actually do even classes to prepare our congregants and our members of our churches and temples and mosques. And
because none of us, I'm sure somebody's listening today, know I got it all spelled out. That was my dad, what he thought. Directives, and here's my funeral.
Yeah.
Here's the songs you're going to sing at my funeral. He had it all figured out. Most of us, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to talk about it. And then here it is. And 99% of us are not ready. And so we fumble, we fight, we stall, we flee, we avoid it. We do everything we can, but it's here right now. Yeah. What do you want to do? Your dad's got two choices. That's the only thing I can see. And you got 30 seconds to decide what's your answer.
And that's what we're here for. That's why we want to have more people trained as faith community nurses. We want to have more of us out there in the community. And as you see, Paul, the value of this type of program, it's invaluable. And Linda, as she just retired from the Irvine Unified School District just this past week.
And were you a nurse there, or is this something you've now?
Oh, no. Yeah, I was a nurse for the district. And, you know, in thinking about what you were saying about not being prepared, none of us in a crisis, even Ethna and I, are not completely prepared. However, what you said about not wanting to talk about it or think about it, we are really working hard with both our church and our community to try to move people to be willing to have those conversations. Yeah. Last fall, we put together a life strategy series. There's a speaker, you know, through our connections with Hogue, we were able to bring someone in and do a three-part series. And it talked about things like, how do we maintain our health and how do we age gracefully? And what are the differences between hospice and palliative care and that sort of thing? And get your questions answered. And then 2 years in a row, we showed different documentaries. One was Endgame with Dr. B.J. Miller, and the other was Being Mortal with Dr. Atul Gawande. And then we had a discussion afterwards. So people watched, and then we came together and kind of discussed that. And just to give people an opportunity, we are all going to go through illnesses and end of life issues.
Not me. I'm not going through any of this stuff. Don't tell me that.
I know. Yeah, we all feel
No.
So, yeah, we really want to help people have a safe space to kind of think through some of that. It doesn't take away the difficulty at the end, but it gives you a little bit of solid ground to stand on. And then you know that you can turn to your clergy and your faith community nurse, that sort of thing, when you're really in a difficult situation to kind of move forward.
And I think it supports, I'll say my own little, we'll give a little private testimony to hear why I still believe in God and go to church. There is something comforting. Maybe it's a fairy tale. I get it. Maybe it is. You can't prove it either way. But there's a comfort in feeling that there's some plan, some purpose to all of this stuff here. Somebody's guiding it other than me, because I don't know where the heck to turn left or right here. And that there's some resource to try to help me, give me some strength, give me some insight or whatever. And specifically say, well, you don't need to go to a church to do that. That's true. But in belonging to, in my case, a Catholic faith, that's the tradition I was raised in. And that's the tradition I feel. It's the faith of my fathers, as they say. I found at those crises, it was something to lean on. And it was something to guide me. At least we knew what the final steps were going to be. All right, we got to get this ready. We got to do this. We got to call the priest. There was something to do. I look at people today and their parents die or something happens and they go, I don't know. What happened to your mom? She died. Or they don't say died. She passed. We lost her. No, we didn't. I know exactly where she is. But the point is, you don't know what, nothing kicks in at that moment and says, okay, all right, I need to start doing this. Here's the final steps. Here's the final ceremony. Here's the final process. There is no process. And so we're
making
it up.
And there is comfort in knowing, Paul, that there is a God. And also be, you know, the purpose of belonging to a community.
Yes, you know, both of those.
Being part of a congregation, having somebody there to walk alongside you, communities to help you. When you eventually retire, I don't know if you ever will.
Never.
But when you eventually retire, I think you'll just be like me, never retire, still go until I drop. Having that support system around us, that community around us, and knowing that we serve the same God.
When did we think we could do it all alone? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm in charge of my own destiny. I do everything at the station here. I'm in charge. Me, 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 me. It's all about me. And I get some of that self-reliance and pull your boots stuff and all that stuff. But at some point, not to sound corny, but it does take a village. It does take a community. Sometimes you need people around you. And we have gone so far towards individualism and work at home and solopreneurs and everything else that we've just taken away.
What did that do for us during COVID, during the lockdown? What did it do? It caused isolation. You didn't have your church or community around you.
If you had one to begin with. I'm saying many of us didn't have a network before we went into COVID, and now we're really left alone.
Yeah. So what do you do when you don't have that network? Then you can't rely on yourself.
Not for everything. Every so often, you got to ask somebody else, a divine power, your next door neighbor. Sometimes you got to get out and seek some help here. And maybe it just reinforces what you already thought. Maybe it's just somebody holding your hand saying, it's okay, you'll figure it, but you need somebody there. Alone is not the answer to go through all of life here. So Linda,
you know, what did she do for her people that were isolated during the COVID time?
That's exactly where I was going to go. Talk about those isolated.
I knew you were. I just beat you to the punch.
You got
there,
me right there. All right.
So we were so blessed to have such a supportive community, not just faith nurses, but everyone banded together. And on communion Sundays, we would take communion kits to people. I mean, we couldn't go into the churches, but our pastor put the communion kits together and we dropped them on people's doorsteps and ran and
servant
at the curb and waved and kind of had a long distance conversation. And we regularly made phone calls. So everybody got phone calls periodically. If somebody needed more support, then we stepped in to do that. If they had extended family or neighbors or other people that were alone, we were able to step in and, you know, reach out and FaceTime or call or have them sit on their porch and sit in the yard and have just a little bit of a conversation so that people didn't feel so incredibly alone during that time.
I know you guys know this because you see it, but I don't know that we all think about it that often. There is a huge number of people, mostly senior citizens, who live alone, who have no one. There is nobody nearby. If they have a family, they're far away, and they survive day by day with the television or the internet and an occasional phone call from somebody. And I think of my late aunt, and we get all choked up here, but she lived a little poor as a church mouse, as they used to say, you know, a little secretary that retired, and she lived in a little apartment out in the desert. And she had a form of cancer, so she was weak and stuff. But she was feisty. She's Irish. She's going to live alone. No, I don't need anybody's help. I'm fine. And I'd try and call her, if not every day, every other day, and I'd try and go out and see her once a week. But by and large, the whole week would go by and she only saw two people. There were only two people that came into her life. One was the Meals on Wheels guy that she couldn't wait to see every morning, who brought her her meal. And for 5 seconds said, checked in and said that she's still alive. And then the other was once a week when she got communion. Somebody came out and gave her communion. Other than that, she didn't see or touch a human being all week long. And I thought, wow.
Yeah. Isn't that pretty sad, Paul, that's happening? And that's why belonging to a church, belonging to a group, believing in the God, and knowing that he's there for you and that you're not alone. Well, and that's just so scary. I've seen so many people through the pandemic, including a family member of mine, who went through very, very bad series of depression after the COVID, which is not really over yet.
Oh, but we think it is. It's over. I'm not going to die. Everything's good. Back to normal.
But it's interesting, you know, one of our faith community nurses is an expert on mental health in her parish at St. Joachim's Parish. And you would love to have her on your show.
Let's do it. Let's bring her on.
Elsa Salgado. And she is just, oh my gosh, she got a grant written for mental health in her parish. She has trained, she's doing training for mental health. She's just an awesome one. So I'd like to bring her on one of these days.
Absolutely. Talk to Dr. Trind. I think let me stop you right there because you brought up two more issues here. So you're there as a resource, someone to walk beside, somebody to give them some more information, help them make a decision. All of that stuff is great before, during, and after probably here. Any crisis, any problem. But I wonder, how do you find those forgotten ones in the community here? You talked about that, and I don't know if Linda does this, but they'll sort of notice, where's Sue? Where's Joe? He hasn't been at church in a while here. maybe we better check in. Or I was thinking there was a little old lady that we used to always kind of say hi to at our Catholic church. And one day she wasn't there. I don't know really where she lived or anything. I couldn't call her up. I don't even sure I knew her last name. But we all just kind of assumed, I guess she died. Maybe she didn't die. Maybe she's still stuck at home somewhere and nobody's even checking in on her. I thought, how horrible, after you told me that story. We just sort of assume, oh, they must have died or they moved or something here. And we just don't think about them. What about those forgotten ones in the community? Do you go out and seek them and say, how you doing?
Linda, I'll let you answer that one.
I think that is really a profound question. Honestly, I don't think we have a good answer. I mean, we continue to try to do community outreach. The broader our network is, especially reaching so many people, you know, in connection with Hogue, the broader our outreach, the more likely we are to have somebody like you that comes to us and says, hey, there's somebody that I haven't seen in a while. I don't know much about them.
Right.
You know, what can we do to try to figure that out? I think we've got a long way to go in forming that solid of a network, but I think we're making small steps in a really good direction towards that, because we really don't want to lose people. You know, the people that are most healthy, the blue zones where people live well over 100 years old and the quality right. of their life is vibrant. It's the social connections as much as anything else that keeps them so healthy. And we really want to start to figure out how to do that here. Especially difficult, I think, in the United States, but here in particular, the blessing is that we're such a diverse group from a cultural standpoint, that there is so much richness in that, but it also helps us be separate. And we really need to find ways to pull people in. You don't have to be from the place that I'm from, and you don't have to believe what I believe, but you're all important, and we want to make sure that we network together and support each other.
Boy, I love that idea. I'd love to see more of that. We think more of each other and less of ourselves. We yeah. reach out rather than just pull back, and so much of us is that. And I think the other reason I asked that question, we're thinking of all these terrible school shootings we've had recently, another whole round of these things. I don't know, an endless debate and nothing ever happens and on and on and on. And I wonder, on the one hand, there's a common answer that says, well, we just got to have more health care. Okay, I'll buy that. But what if these people don't seek health care? What if they don't want health care? It isn't just a factor of, well, we have it. And then they'll all come, oh, boy, I need health care. I'm thinking of shooting up a school. Here, help me. I think you've got to go seek people. You've got to go find people. There's got to be red flags. Somebody bought 800 rounds of ammunition and is going on the internet saying dark things. I think we should better go check in on that person there, where we have to reach out. The assumption is in our society, we're going to create resources and it's up to you to go find it if you need it. But if you don't find it or you don't reach out, tough, then you're just going to fail and fall into depression or shoot up a school or do something crazy here.
And that's where we again come alongside, because oftentimes the grandmother is taking care of the grandkid who has issues and problems.
Disturbed, so hearing voices, angry, whatever. Yeah.
yeah. Right. If they belong to a community, you know, we can see those little subtle changes in people. We can see it in the grandmother trying to deal with them, a child that's rebelled and gone astray. We can see it in people, a lot of these things. That's part of being belonging to a community.
And to pay attention to these signs and to not overlook yes. them. Apparently, the Uvalde school shooting, this kid, what little we know about him, he went and killed his grandmother, or tried to kill yes. his grandmother before he went and shot the school up. The yes. grandmother had been struggling to take care of this kid yes. and whatever his mental health issues were and anger or whatever was propelling him behind this. I don't remember the whole story, but there's typically some sad story, and she was trying to do her best, and yeah. they were in conflict, and she didn't know how to handle it. She's trying her best, and eventually it explodes. Clearly, had she been part of a community or been one of you guys hanging around, and somebody said, you know, you might want to go talk to this lady because she's my next door neighbor. She's my friend, and man, she's really struggling. Maybe she won't reach out, or maybe she doesn't even know how to reach out, but maybe you can reach in.
That's exactly, Paul. And that's what nurses, not just faith community nurses do, but, you know, nurses, as we are honoring nurses.
Oh, what an honorable profession to do here. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. Linda, you might want to tell Paul how you took care of your colleagues and your nurses in your community.
Yeah. So, you know, as you brought up the school shootings, as Ethna just mentioned, I was 15 years in the school district as a nurse here in Irvine. had been a school nurse for many years prior to that as well. But I will say, and sort of off topic, is that I feel so blessed to be in the district that I was working in because mental health has become such a huge focus. The nurses and counselors, teachers, administrators, psychologists, special education teachers, everybody has really pulled together to try to identify issues. You know,
let's get ahead of them. Let's not just respond to them. Let's try and find ways to prevent them from having, and that means we've got to find those people in trouble. We've got to reach in and not just wait for them to reach out. It isn't enough. I'm going to give my little sermon here, but I think it's not enough to just say we're going to have more doctors, more resources, more information, more. The assumption is that they're going to take advantage of that, that they're not just going to know where to find it, but they're going to use it. And if you got mental health, the last thing, you're a homeless person, you're on drugs, you're hearing voices, you're not going to take advantage of any of that, perhaps. So someone has to reach in and say, I see you're in trouble. I sense there's something going on here. We have to at least reach out to you.
And that's why we are also, as faith community nurses and nurses, we're learning more about mental health. And in fact, I'm presenting a talk on an overview of mental health in August to one of the senior centers so they can be aware of what mental illness, what to look out for.
To see the signs. Haven't we all seen it? Every time somebody, a crazy person, shoots up someplace or a mass killer comes forward, and they go interview the neighbors and the family and the friends, and they all go, I didn't see this coming. Boy, Joe was just such a great guy. Why would he go off and shoot up the post office? Why would he be killing kids in the back room or abducting women? I'm stunned. And I'm like, oh, baloney. Somebody had to see this. Well, how about he was hanging cats as a kid? We ignore the signs and overlook the thing. I'll give you one quick example. Another, sorry to keep sharing my own life stories here, but I only have one daughter. We adopted her out of foster care. It's been a wonderful, crazy, wild ride. And she's now married and has two great grandkids. We adopted her when she was 11, took her when she was 10. And she got taken into foster care because she was getting beaten up. The hell was getting beat out of her. And she went into school, and some school nurse noticed that she was all black and blue and actually had broken ribs, and immediately called the cops, and they immediately took her into possession. They immediately took her out of the thing that she'd been getting beaten up for a while. But for that, she would have died or stayed there. Somebody saw the sign, and it was the Linda in her school district that said, oh my God. She wasn't talking about it. She wasn't complaining about it. She was afraid to talk about it. So we've gotten smarter on some of these things. We still have so far to go, not just the physical signs, but the unseen signs. Oh, there's something bad going on here. Somebody's troubled. Somebody's in need.
And we're trained to, all healthcare professionals are trained to recognize those signs. And we're also mandated reporters. So we have to report when we see something like this. And that's why we're trained to see those changes in people.
What about that, Linda? So are you seeing the subtle changes in your community? Do you extend that to not just the nurses and teachers and doctors now have responsibilities to better training to spot this stuff and a legal responsibility to report these things? Do we carry that same trend into your congregation? I'm not saying it's a legal responsibility, but where you're looking for, you're not just saying, okay, I got a desk and anybody want, I got a number, call me if you need me. I got a clinic coming up on Tuesday. Anybody want to talk to me? Okay, nope, I'm going home. Or are you looking for those, somebody's missing, somebody seems to be upset. I'm here to quietly talk about if you've got some issues or problems here. I'm happy, it's confidential or whatever, that reaching out rather than just waiting for them to reach in.
And we're really trying to work on that. And for the last few years in our congregation, we have not only in our constant contact, our, you know, the information that we push out to the congregation to give them information about mental health and just emotional support, that sort of thing. But then there are many times when we've actually gone in and spoken to the congregation as well and try to just help them be aware of how important it is. First, to pay attention to yourself and how you're doing,
yes, right.
But then look around you and how are other people doing as well? And if you don't know what to do, come to one of us and let us help you figure that out.
That's it. All right. Well, how do they do that if they want to find you guys? And even if I'm not in your congregation, you're saying we can reach out to you and say, I don't really know how I'm feeling. I don't really know how my family members feel. And I'm a little worried. I don't really know how my neighbor, I don't really know who they are, but they're acting weird or something's going on or I'm worried. How do we find you and make that call?
Anybody can reach out to the church office. We have a website. And if a call comes in where they need us, either the clerical staff or the pastor, reach out to us, you know, immediately, and we can step in and provide help. But reaching out, and Ethnet, you can speak to this better than I can. Anybody could reach out to Susan Johnson and Ethna with the Hope Faith Community Nurses, and they can connect you anywhere with someone who...
And what if I have no faith community, or I hate to say it, no faith?
Don't need it.
You don't need it. They can reach out to susan.johnson2@hoag.org, and she will be able to help give resources, help any community that wants to start a faith community nurse in their program. If they have nurses in their church, we can train them in the foundations of faith community nursing and give them resources to be able to do this position in their congregation or community or mosque or temple or whatever congregation they are.
Fantastic. Well, I don't know if Dr. Trent's still with us. He was just monitoring us as he's going about his duties here. But I want to thank him for bringing you both in again in this program to light, because until I met Aetna, I never knew there was such a thing out there. And I wish there had been. I wish I'd known about it. I wish I'd had access to it in the moments in my crisis in my life, because it's a lonely, confusing, scary walk alone. And it would be nice to walk with somebody who's been through it before and has a little more information about it than I do. All right. Thanks so much. Give us one more. Is there a website, any place you can go learn about?
Yeah, you can go on to hoag.org and look up Faith Community Nursing on the website, and you can reach us that way.
How many faith community nurses are there? Are there dozens?
We at Hoag, Susan, my manager, who is an awesome, awesome manager, by the way, shout out to her. She's a great teacher and trainer. She just finished training 150 faith community nurses. Wow. And she and Nancy Amo are doing a class right now. And I believe there's 9 in that class right now across state. They're not just here in California, but we can train across state as well.
Because it's just, I guess I'm making the wrong assumption that this is fairly new and fairly rare. Maybe it's more widespread than I thought it was here. How many in your congregation, Linda? Are you the only one serving that church?
No, we are so blessed. We actually have 10 nurses and a psychologist that make up our health ministries team. And there are 4 out of those 10 that have actually completed the foundations course. And we bring that information back to everyone to pull together as a team to serve.
I
just want to say it again. It's really not just for our congregation. Right. It really is for the entire community.
I'm quitting my Catholic parish and I'm converting to becoming a Methodist and joining your church tomorrow. What
come
a great
and join
program.
Us. We'd love to have you.
I'm out of there. The Catholic Church, I'm out of there, buddy. I don't know. Maybe they have them in my church. I have no idea. I have no idea.
You don't even have to switch. You can still jump in.
Oh, well, that's even better, because I already know the prayers and I already know the thing. I don't want to learn something new at my age here. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, both of you guys. It's amazing. I hope you come back and share more stories, particularly as we continue to face more and more, what do we call them, crises in our country, one after another. Sometimes we're just so exhausted. It was COVID, and now it's gas prices, and now it's a war, and now it's a school shooting. And it's like, can't we take a break for a while? Oh, my God, one on top of another here. But the hits keep coming. Anyway, thanks for sharing it, and keep doing the work. You're doing God's work here. That's all I can tell you here. All right. Thanks so much for joining us here on this latest edition of Health Talks with Dr. Trin.